amigo.
McCulloch reined up, but let the mule behind him stop at its own casual, safer pace. Twisting in the saddle, he turned, putting his hand on the .44-40 Colt at his hip. Behind him, Green Clayton pulled back on his reins and made an extra dally with his lead rope around the saddle horn. The small Comanchero turned and looked down the trail. A rider emerged from where the flat prairie ended and the canyon country dropped off. McCulloch did not know where the man had been hiding, but he had found a good place. That hombre could have killed McCulloch and Clayton before they knew they were dead. The man rode a buckskin, and he carried a Winchester Yellow Boy that had been studded with brass tacks on the forestock and stock, and the barrel had been sawed off to something like 12 inches. He put the carbine in his left hand and held out his right toward Clayton.
Martinez.
I thought I would kill you, but then I remembered that some tall, mean hombre is to be bringing bullets for the guns we stole.
Yeah.
Green Clayton shot McCulloch a glance.
He's tall. He's mean. And...
He slowly, carefully raised the lead rope just a bit.
We got enough bullets to mow down an entire army.
That is good. Muy bien.
He grinned at McCulloch.
You do business, senor?
If the price is right.
I like your partner, amigo. Come, we shall ride into the Canyon of Weeping Women. I will send Pedro up when we meet him at the entrance. It is good to see you, Clayton. It has been a long time, too long. Boss Lyndon, he'll be happy to see you.
Oh, I'd like to see him.
Word is, you're having a big powwow. Lots of tribes.
He nodded at the crates and satchels, kegs and boxes, strapped to the mule he'd been leading.
See, but so far our only Indian customers are Kiowas and Cheyennes. The Apaches, they no show. The Comanches, we have no word from them either. But we have gringo and fine, wealthy businessmen from New Mexico and Colorado territories. You will make out like bandidos.
Any sign of Black Forehead's bunch or those yellow-livered patches?
No.
One of the drunkards on the porch threw a bottle.
Start the bidding, Lyndon. We'll take our money back to New Mexico and wait to deal with Tafoya's boys.
Cynthia McCulloch stared at the Comanchero leader, who had to be drunker than any man she had ever seen. He looked at the tub of hot water where Cynthia had replaced Maria to finish the evil man's laundry. She glanced at Jim Bob Hardwick, who was staring off toward where the women prisoners remained. Likely, she guessed, wondering about Maria. Cynthia's mind kept picturing the frightened twins and their mother. Finally, Boss Lyndon gestured to Cullen Bryce.
All right. Go fetch the other petticoats. Bring Wild Kent with you. Miguel, get the Kiowas. Two hatchets. Go bring in Bad Buffalo and his dog soldiers. I'll get my ledger and that sack of banknotes. The last sale starts in 15 minutes. Get everybody over yonder. I'll meet y'all directly.
He took a detour, however, toward the privy behind the canyon. Jed Breen slid behind a rock. He leaned the sharps on the branch of a pathetic juniper and pulled out the map.
We found it.
Uh-huh.
Breen glanced at the map and brought up the sharps. He stared through the scope, moving the rifle slowly from northwest to southeast.
Nobody's there. Nobody's there!
What the hell?
Sean Keegan looked too, but even with the naked eye, he saw...
Horses. It's a boxed canyon of horses.
Keegan picked up the map. He looked at it, then at the terrain below.
That puny cuss! I'll tear his head off. He's tricked us. God, I'm sorry.
But maybe not. Remember, Clayton said that Boss Lyndon might have switched things around. He has been in prison a spell.
And he could also have been playing us for fools. And you won't be able to shoot that crate of nitro when Matt gives you the signal. When we don't even know.
Breen had already looked back at the map. He raised his hand.
Let me think.
He studied the fingers of canyons that fed off the main one. He looked to his right.
All right, Sean. That canyon we saw over there.
Huts and shanties and...
That has to be where the prisoners are. Where Ramona is, most likely. And Cynthia. And who the hell knows how many other poor women and kids.
Keegan blinked. Then he straightened and waited. like any good horse soldier non-commissioned officer, waiting for his orders.
Find that trail down. Get down there, get Ramona, get Cynthia, and get as many women and prisoners as you can out of there.
He took off running towards the ridge.
And where in the hell are you off to?
To find Matt before it's too late.
Everyone was moving away from the cabin of cottonwood logs, except some of the big merchants who were still on the porch drinking Boss Linden's whiskey. Jim Bob Hardwick studied the open fields near the stone storage vault. That's the best word he could come up with to describe the big, solid structure. He looked toward the privy, and then at the cabin, and then looked for Maria before he remembered she was back in the other side canyon. He frowned, where Boss Linden had sent Cullen Bryce, and where Wild Kent Montgomery, the treacherous wretch, was with those poor women and the two twins and sweet, gentle, beautiful Maria. Men began leaving the area in front of the big log cabin toward the open field between Boss Linden's home and that strange big stone building. Jim Bob looked at the privy, and then he heard a familiar sound. He turned to his left and saw the horses. His stomach twisted, uncertain of what it meant to see Mal Martinez leading two white men who pulled two scrawny, overloaded mules behind them.
Hombres! The bullets are here! The bullets are here!
Jim Bob's eyes turned toward Miss Cynthia. Maria? Well, he had to concede that Maria was on her own. But she could take care of herself. He would have to protect poor Miss Cynthia with his life if it came down to it.
This way!
Mal Martinez trotted his horse past Jim Bob. Jim Bob's eyes barely glanced at the squirming, sweating, ugly little dude who pulled the first mule. But then his eyes took in the other man, ramrod straight, eyes looking one way, straight ahead, focused on his purpose until his entire body trembled and he stared directly at Miss Cynthia. And that pretty but tough lady looked directly at him. She followed that man. So did all the others.
Boss Linden! It's time, hombre. He wants to sell everything and he spends all his time in the privy.
Jim Bob Hardwick looked once more at the outhouse and then the big cabin. Seeing no sign of Boss Linden, he fell into what seemed to be a silent funeral procession. When Matt McCulloch swung out of the saddle, he pulled the Winchester from the scabbard and swatted the gelding's backside with the barrel.
Get!
Then he stared across the open field at his daughter and tried to send the same message to her. He couldn't stop now. The cards had all been dealt. This was the hand he had to play. So he walked to the mule he'd been leading.
Good boy.
Green Clayton showed a surprising sign of humanity when he swatted his horse's backside with a hard slap, all the while keeping a firm hand on the lead rope to his mule. McCulloch approached him, and the two men stared at each other.
Now what?
This is your plan, Ranger. You tell me.
My plan's gone to hell. Where's that coming cherub boss of yours?
McCulloch saw feathered headdresses he recognized as belonging to Southern Cheyenne. And he recognized the hard, ugly face of Pony Soldier Killer, the brutal, merciless Kiowa leader. And then he saw Cynthia, standing next to an armed young cowboy. McCulloch vowed to kill that lowlife if he laid a hand on that blonde-haired beauty. Then reason returned. He was alive. Cynthia was alive. Ramona, well, he prayed for her and her soul. His eyes briefly shot out toward the surrounding ridges. Maybe, God willing, Jed Breen was sighting down on this place with his sharps. Maybe Sean Keegan was somewhere, had found Ramona and was leading her to safety.
Come on, unload already.
Clayton, it's time to unload the merchandise.
Heaven help us.
Green Clayton's cold eyes met Matt McCulloch's. Men said nothing. They scarcely breathed. Both men's hands reached up toward the thick rope, and after a quick bob of the head from each man, they went to work. Gently, almost as if they were holding a baby in their hands, they moved the long crate away from the mule.
This one is safe.
They gently set the box on the ground, eyed each other, and moved back to the mule. This time they found the long crate at the bottom of the pack on the other side. McCulloch tried to block out everything except the knots. He prayed Green Clayton was doing the same. When the knots fell free and the ropes dropped to the red earth, they stepped away from the mule and looked down at the crate. On the end closest to Green Clayton, McCulloch saw the red cross painted on the top of the lid, and on both sides. There was another one with the cross in the middle of a circle, all painted red, like a haphazard bullseye, a target for Jed Breen. McCulloch glanced up the hill, but saw only red earth, blue sky, and the pale white light of a sun sinking toward the horizon. Two more crates followed, then satchels and kegs, and then they had the pleasure of doing the same thing again. Four more crates, one with a shot of nitroglycerin, enough to blow everyone nearby to kingdom come.
Where's Boss Linden?
Green Clayton walked on the other side of the merchandise for sale, merchandise of death. Then McCulloch turned and found the bright, if hard, face of his daughter. For just a second, maybe two, no more than three, Matt McCulloch thought he was looking at his wife. Then he thought he was staring at his baby girl. Then he saw a woman, full grown. Cynthia smiled.
What the bloody hell is this? This is my fandango, mis amigo. I call the tune here.
Matt turned away from his daughter and saw Boss Linden slap one of the long crates. Nothing happened. The leathery man stopped next to another wooden crate. His face brightened. Then Matt McCulloch saw Green Clayton heading straight for the Comanchero boss.
Mi amigo!
Forgetting his bad leg or the cane he held, Boss Linden held out both hands as if to hug his long-lost friend. And McCulloch understood that Linden had not sold out Green Clayton. It was probably just like McCulloch had said. Comanchero wasn't freed at Pirin Farm because none of the raiders expected Sean Keegan and Jed Breen to have been there to offer a stiff resistance. Green Clayton, McCulloch realized, saw none of that. He saw only revenge. Green Clayton drew his Bowie knife and rammed it into Boss Linden's belly.
Oh, hell!
He was running now, across the field, half expecting to be riddled with bullets. McCulloch reached the far side, grabbed Cynthia's arm, and thought he must have pulled the limb from its socket. He was heading for the big cabin, but Cynthia freed herself from his grip. She stopped, turned, looked the other way, and found her father's eyes.
This way, Papa!
She was running then, looking to her left.
Jim Bob, follow us!
McCulloch followed his daughter toward the big stone shed. Boss Linden staggered back, and Green Clayton pulled the knife out of the man's belly. Glancing at the blood staining his shirt front, Linden looked at Clayton, saw the hatred in his friend's eyes.
Why?
Green Clayton started to slice Linden's throat when he heard a gunshot. He spun around, dropping the knife and drawing a revolver. He spotted McCulloch running toward a pale-colored structure, so it wasn't McCulloch who fired. Then he saw a cattleman lying in front of the porch of the big cottonwood cabin, a smoking gun in his right hand and an arrow quivering in the center of his chest. He saw the Southern Cheyenne chief, Bad Buffalo, turn and fall to his knees, clutching his throat with both hands, unable to stop the blood that flowed as though his throat had been sliced with a Bowie knife. He saw the Indian fall dead, and he heard the Cheyenne warriors. How many had he been told were here? More than 30? Several of them were charging toward the traders who had been drinking Boss Linden's brandy. He turned back to finish Boss Linden. His eyes met Linden's. He saw part of the cane in Linden's left hand. He saw the handle in Boss Linden's right. He saw the shining silver dagger that was attached to the curved handle. And he felt that dagger ram between his ribs. Linden released the handle as Green Clayton staggered back, palming his gun. Linden thought he saw Olivia running. He saw Cheyenne and Kiowa rushing his men, rushing the merchants he had invited. He saw the revolver in Green Clayton's hand. And his last thought, before he fell back toward the boxes of guns and ammunition, was that he would never get to feel the ocean breeze at Veracruz. Cynthia pushed open the door and fell down. Her father and her new friend followed. Cynthia McCulloch covered her eyes with her right arm and let her left hand prevent the endless hot particles from clogging her nose and mouth. Even through those thick stone walls, she felt heat that matched the hottest singes of hell. The entire building rattled, the mortar vanishing, and she managed to glimpse its collapse in one instance. But she heard nothing, as though her eardrums had been obliterated. This was the way she had always imagined the end of the world would begin. Jed Breen was lying on his back, stars of myriad colors flashing before him. His head hurt, he didn't know where his rifle was, and the bells pealing inside his eardrums almost made him scream. He also felt the sandstone rattling all around him. He sat up and forced his eyes open, gently brought his hand to the back of his head and felt a lump already forming, and real tender, but no blood. The ground still shook, and his ears would not stop ringing, but he was alive. He pushed his left hand blindly on the ground and felt the warmth and smoothness of brass, the telescopic sight on his sharps. He turned his head ever so gently and finally got his eyelids to move up. It took a moment to focus, but at last, he saw the 50 caliber rifle. Looked no worse for the wear, so he dragged it over and set it across his lap. He found the blue sky, the white cloud, the red rocks, and then he saw the billowing black smoke, like the funnel of a tornado, twisting, spinning, even sparks showering down from 500 feet in the air.
Matt.
He bit back the pain in his head, his back, his thighs, his heart. He used the heavy rifle to push himself to his feet. Picked a path off the ridge and headed down into the canyon of weeping women.
We fall back on the next plan. Get the girls. Get out of there alive.
Matt McCulloch's voice echoed in Sean Keegan's head as he looked at the thick, violent cloud of ugly black smoke. The explosion had knocked him off his feet. He pushed himself up and looked for his Springfield. It had to be here somewhere. He had been carrying it when the ground went out from under him. Keegan then peered down from the edge of the cliff.
Of course.
The damn Springfield was 100 feet below. The stock was busted off. He'd have to climb down and get it, and while Sean Keegan could ride a horse anywhere, climbing was not his best skill, other than climbing to his feet after getting knocked down in a fist fight or getting staggering drunk. He drew the revolver from the holster and started walking. Walking he did not care for either, but he was going downhill, and the path here seemed easier. He did not look at the black smoke, not stand to do that. That would remind him of Matt. Matt McCulloch, who had paid the ultimate price. He stared at the smoke from what had to be cook fires in a feeder canyon that had to be where the Comancheros kept prisoners. That's where he was going. That's what his orders had been. Matt McCulloch had given Sergeant Sean Keegan orders, and Keegan was a man who obeyed his orders.
Get the girls. Get out of there alive.
Seemed lighter inside the shed. When Matt McCulloch rolled over, sunlight baked his face and hands. He smelled smoke, and ash rained upon him. His eyes opened, blinking several times when he looked to his side. Cynthia lay there, face up, blinking, breathing heavily. McCulloch rose to his knees and saw the boy, the young man actually, his back against the wall, bleeding from a scratch on his neck and forehead, and covered with white dust. He might have been in shock, but he was alive. He looked up and saw black smoke, ash, dust, and a blue sky. The roof of the shed was gone.
Stay here.
After rising to his feet, McCulloch drew his revolver, pulled the hammer to full cock, and pushed open the door. The air felt heavy with dust and smoke.
Stay here!
The door had been pelted with stones, bent nails, bolts. The rugged walls were pockmarked from the canister he had loaded in the crates and bags.
Grape shot. Good call, Jed.
Slowly, he stepped toward the trading ground in Boss Linden's cabin. Even 20 yards past the shed, cacti and junipers had been cut in half or torn asunder. If Cynthia had not led them to this shed, they all would have been ripped to pieces. He looked at the log cabin, engulfed in fire. Black smoke rose, twisting, turning, ugly, menacing. That log cabin had been Matt's destination.
I see it.
We heard you.
What happened? Where is everybody?
He could see a few bodies on the ground near the burning cabin, scattered about. Where the crates of rifles and bullets, and obviously the nitroglycerin and dynamite, had been, a giant crater, smoking black and gray, grimly replaced them. There was no sign of Green Clayton. No sign of Boss Linden. He didn't think Jed Breen had done this with that Sharps rifle of his. Hell, he didn't know what had happened. But it had happened. McCulloch looked at his daughter.
You all right?
She nodded, but she did not look away from the ugliness, the blackness.
Where are the horses?
Corrals.
Cynthia pointed, and the kid pointed off farther south.
There's a box canyon yonder. Keep the stolen.
They didn't hear the sound, but saw the dust and several galloping horses near that far wall, running towards the trail that McCulloch and Clayton had been led down.
They look so pretty when they run like that.
The only thing pretty about this canyon.
They won't go far. And that ain't even a quarter of them. Maria!
He broke from the others and started walking toward the sound.
This isn't over.
Right then, Sean Keegan longed to have that busted Springfield instead of just a shotgun. 100 yards ahead on the flats near the smoking campfire, a leathery man waved two pistols over the heads of several women. He appeared to be plumb out of his mind.
I don't know what the hell's happening!
Keegan couldn't see the women. They were likely sitting, lying down, huddled together, praying for mercy. He didn't recognize the woman's voice he had heard. But that madman with two guns 100 yards away could be aiming one of those pistols at Cynthia McCulloch or Ramona Bondaroff. Hell, he realized. It didn't even matter if Cynthia or Ramona were there. He remembered his orders, pushed himself to his feet, and started running.
Maria!
The boy was off like a young colt trying to gallop for the first time. McCulloch cupped a hand over his mouth, but stopped himself from calling out.
What's his name?
Jim Bob Hardwick.
What?
He started to shout, but stopped.
Jim Bob!
No! Let him go! They hear us coming, we get killed.
He looked gravely at his daughter, but saw in her eyes that she understood. He knelt and motioned for her to do the same.
You know this land better than I do. Where's he going? And how do we get there without getting spotted or killed?
The woman ran out of an arroyo. Jed Breen saw the dark hair, thought he recognized Ramona, and he broke into a sprint. He was still running when the other figure, a bearded man in buckskins, climbed out of the arroyo and came to his feet. The woman hit the dirt, and then both the Comanchero and Breen stopped running. They saw each other. The bandit started to raise his pistol, but Breen had his sharps coming to his shoulder, knowing he was out of pistol range. But the handgun stopped coming up, and the barrel pointed down. Breen could see the woman. The revolver was aimed at her, and it sure looked like Ramona Bondaroff.
I kill her, hombre! Drop that fancy gun! Drop it, or she dies!
Hurt her and you die.
We all die, hombre! But she dies first!
Jed!
I will not say it again, hombre! I'll just put a bullet in her brain, and then take my chances with you!
Yeah, damn it!
He pitched the rifle into the sand and spread his hands away from the holstered Colt. Gun belt had moved around while he ran, the holster behind him now.
Come closer, hombre. I would like to see your face before you die.
Breen tried to focus on the man walking towards him and not the woman behind. Ramona Bondaroff rose to her knees. She seemed to stare at Jed Breen, maybe wondering if he were a ghost. Hell, Breen told himself. She could be a dance hall girl who didn't even look like Ramona.
Chad.
Silencio.
His grin widened.
Amigo, por favor. Unfasten the gun belt, hombre. With your left hand, muy pronto.
Green reached for the buckle. He felt himself shaken as Ramona stood. His heart pounded. He saw her raise the rock over her head. Conchero turned.
What?
Breen grabbed for his lightning, but even when the gun was in his hand, he knew he could not risk a shot. He might hit Ramona. Now Jed Breen ran. He ran until he reached Ramona and swept her into his arms. He only glanced at the Comanchero as he picked up the gunsmith's daughter. And he carried her away from the man with the crushed skull. He carried her toward the smoking fire. He was so out of his mind, for the first time in his adult life, he even forgot about the 50 caliber Sharps rifle he had left on the canyon floor. Hell, Sean Keegan had never been much of a hand when it came to running, and shooting at the same time, that required an exceptional gunman, which Sean Keegan was not. Mexican bandit saw him. He realized the range and started charging. Keegan aimed, but remembered to hold his fire until he was in range. The Comanchero stopped, shoved one gun into his sash, and raised the other. He used both hands to steady his Colt. Keegan felt a bullet off to his left and acted on instinct.
Damn it!
Too bad for you, amigo!
Keegan felt a sharp pain in his side. Blood flowed. A scratch, but a bullet scratch could hurt like hell. The bullet punched a hole in the air and nothing else. He had to be hallucinating. Maybe the bullet had actually killed him and he was already dead. Comanchero turned around just as the women tackled him.
The hell?
Keegan blinked, pressed his left hand against his side, felt the blood, the pain. He saw the women on their knees, pounding, pounding, pounding. Man's hat was flung aside. One woman raised her hand.
Back away! Back away!
She aimed the Comanchero's Colt at the figure in the grass. Sergeant Sean Keegan stared at his gun as if it were foreign to him. He let it slide into the holster. He reached up as if to tip his hat as the ladies rose and glared at him from blood-splattered faces.
Sean Keegan, ladies, at your service.
The shooter had used her torn sleeve to wipe the blood from her face.
They call me Paulita. Hijo de puta!
Pleasure.
Jim Bob Hardwick would have known that voice anywhere. He ran toward the smoke, jumped the ditch, rounded the bend, and slid to a stop. Maria knelt a few yards away, her nose gushing blood, and Cullen Bryce held a revolver, cocked, and pointed right at Jim Bob's chest.
Boy, you're a boil on my ass.
Jim Bob felt something ram into his side. He hit the ground hard, rolled over, reached for a pistol he didn't have as he came up. He saw Cullen Bryce running toward him, and stop and turn the gun toward the canyon wall. The Comanchero dropped to his knee. He glared at Jim Bob and aimed the gun directly at his head.
Oh, very sweet. But I ain't got bullets to waste on a gutless wonder like you. Or that brave little petticoat.
That's when Jim Bob saw Maria. Saw the blood pouring out of her shoulder. And realized she had leaped up, knocked him out of death's path. Her eyes were wide with shock.
Maria!
He crawled over to her. Tears half blinded him. He pressed his hands against the bloody shoulder.
What? Why? Why'd you do that for?
She smiled.
Mi amor.
Jim Bob saw one of the prostitutes rise.
Let me help. Sit down, you stupid whore.
She paid no attention to Cullen Bryce as she walked past him. He rose quickly and swung the gun barrel.
Sit down!
It caught the prostitute's head and drove her back toward the crippled woman, the mother, and her twin boys. Her forehead was cut savagely.
Mama, she's hurt, Mama. She's hurt.
Mrs. O'Leary just blinked. Cullen Bryce turned around, stared again at the canyon.
Whoever is out there, you best come in. Come in now.
Come in now with your hands up or I'll start killing every single man, woman, and child with me.
He aimed his gun at Maria's chest.
I ain't fooling.
No! Please!
Papa.
Cynthia thought she would throw up. They were right there, and they were hiding.
Easy. We'll get them.
Cynthia! Where are you, Cynthia? Please help us. Please help us.
Matt McCulloch felt his daughter tense and stand up. She raised her hands over her head and started walking. She walked ramrod straight, no hesitation. She walked like he had so often walked. Proudly, knowing she was in the right.
Hell.
Matt McCulloch stared at the Colt, shoved it into his holster, and pushed himself to his feet. He walked slowly, hands spread apart, following his daughter into the camp.
Well, 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 well.
Cullen Bryce turned his revolver to the big man.
Unbuckle it, mister, or you'll get it in the belly now. That's better.
He eyed the blonde woman next to him.
I should have figured it was you. You got sand. Who's your friend?
When she did not answer, he pointed the gun at Darnell.
My father, Matt.
Oh, I know him by name, Missy. Just wanted to know y'all's relationship.
Keeping the gun aimed at the kid, Bryce turned to look at the big man.
Like father, like daughter, eh? Matthew McCulloch, it has been a long time. I've been thinking about how I'd get around to killing you. And you just made it all so easy. You and your little girl.
He pointed vaguely at the smoke.
What the hell was that about?
Just breaking up a little confab.
Oh, you always had style, McCulloch. Gotta give you that. Boss Linden.
Indisposed.
Damn. Anybody left alive?
Probably. Hightailing it for parts unknown.
And Linden's vault?
Vault?
The stone shed. Don't tell me it got blowed up.
It's there. Why don't you just take that money in that vault and leave?
That'll do, McCulloch. Right after I send you to hell, you start packing jackass.
Bryce turned to a flash of movement. It was that mother of the twin boys, the one who hadn't spoken or hardly even made a sound. She was kneeling over the prostitute whose head Bryce had cracked.
Hey!
Bryce turned back toward McCulloch, aiming the revolver at the former ranger's belly.
You leave that worthless Betty alone. Leave her alone. Get back to your boys before I make you the mother of two corpses.
Mama?
He saw the blonde woman and her hard rock father looking away from Cullen Bryce. And he always hated it when he was not the center of attention.
And what are y'all looking at?
He turned. The woman, the silent, brain-addled mother of those stupid twin boys, had stepped away from the unconscious prostitute. She aimed a little pepper box at his chest.
What the hell do you think you're doing, you crazy old sow?
I'm protecting my sons.
Well, hell, seems like everybody's talking all of a sudden.
He frowned and let his eyes narrow.
I said, put that gun down, lady. That little pepper box looks like it'll blow up in your hand.
But it didn't. It put just one round, neatly, in Cullen Bryce's heart. Matt McCulloch accepted the cup of coffee one of the women brought him.
Obliged, man.
He leaned against the canyon wall, drained. He didn't think he could even lift the cup to his mouth, but somehow he did. Sean Keegan limped over, helped by two women. The faces of the women reminded McCulloch of soldiers he had served with during the late war.
You all right?
Keegan pulled his hand away from the bandaged side to accept the cup of coffee.
You?
His eyes landed on his daughter, who was helping Jim Bob Hardwick patch up Maria's shoulder.
Yeah, I think so.
Breen?
I don't know.
Then he saw that white hair. A weight lifted off his heart as Ramona Bondaroff and Jed Breen limped into the camp together, leaning on each other. Breen's face lightened when he saw his two partners, and he nodded. Ramona seemed intent on taking him to the fire, where wounds were being patched, where a prostitute with one amputated leg, a prostitute with a thick white bandage around her head, and a dark-haired beauty with a bullet just pulled out of her shoulder lay, all being tended to by a woman who had helped Sean Keegan to this shady spot, several other women, and a mother and her two boys. But they diverted to Breen's fellow jackals.
Ah, I'm all right, boys. How about you, Ramona?
I'm fine, Jed.
She smiled at McCulloch, then at Keegan, but her face had changed. She looked older and a whole lot tougher.
Let me see what I can do to help.
But she did not let go of Jed Breen's right hand until the last possible minute.
Jed, where's your sharps?
Breen blinked and looked around.
Huh, hell if I know.
The woman named Paulita stood at the fire.
Listen to me, women, and you two boys, and you.
She pointed at Jim Bob Hardwick.
I haven't seen you do a lick of work, mister. Well, you're going to do some now. We need to get horses saddled. Those of you who haven't ridden anything but side saddle, well, that's going to change. We've got horses in that canyon, so half of us will be walking to bring those back. You two, take that Winchester. Get to the trail that leads out of here. I don't think anyone's left alive that wants to do us harm, but there are supposed to be 100 Apache Indians coming for us. We're getting out of this canyon. You stay here. Make sure these boys don't die. And look after our wounded heroines. The rest of you, we need grub. We need canteens filled with water. I don't know where the hell we've been since we got here, but it's a long way to civilization. It's a long way home. We're going home, ladies. We're going home. And I'd like to get there as fast as I can.
Cynthia stared at her father before joining the crowd of women to round up the horses. Jed Breen lifted his head toward the black smoke. Then he looked at Matt McCulloch.
Nice plan, Matt.
From the Immigrant City Weekly Clarion and Light.
State news. The Austin Sympathizer reports in last Wednesday's edition that R. Aberbach, new superintendent of prisons, is closing the Peering Farm, located at the southeastern edge of the eroded plains. Budget cuts are cited as the reason, plus the extreme location of Peter Peering's cotton operation and difficulty in finding guards willing to work in such a remote region. Mr. Aberbach replaces the previous superintendent, who was relieved of his duties for personal matters, the governor has said. The Sympathizer's diligent editor is trying to learn the details of said matters. From the El Paso Independent, we learn that the notorious band of Warm Springs Apaches, led by Chief Dogheart, was turned back in a skirmish at Rattlesnake Ridge. An army patrol led by a Lieutenant Grimsley is said to have come across the Apaches and engaged them in a running battle that lasted over 36 hours. Two Apaches were killed, according to the report, and Dogheart himself was injured. The cavalry suffered two minor injuries. Cheers all around to the brave boys at Fort Spaulding near Purgatory City. Residents of Waco have the honor and privilege of taking in a three-day engagement at the Brazos River Opera House of a show featuring the latest sharpshooter of the Lone Star State, Mrs. Aoife O'Leary, who claimed the $1,500 reward for bringing in fiendish brigand Cullen Bryce to the Mobedi, Texas Rangers with a clean bullet wound to his heart. That led to our governor shaming that Rangers regiment and removing its captain, who never came close to capturing that villain and his associates. The plain-spoken widow won the crowd over with her straightforward manner, with song and dance numbers by her precocious twin sons, Darnell and Danny. The act also included a sobering lecture from two former ladies of ill repute, one Dame Mae Nilsson and Peg Leg Greta, titled The Evils of the Flesh and What Life Has Taught Us. We have hopes that we will be able to land this hot ticket after they finish touring the dime museums in Chicago, New York, and Boston. Speaking of outlaws, Boss Linden has disappeared, according to the Mobedi Register. In fact, there had been no sign of Comanchero activity in months. Rumor has it, the Register opines, that Boss has retired to Veracruz. That scoundrel Linden is not the only person to have vanished in the Southwest. Where is Black Forehead, the Shackleford County Weekly Herald asks. The Comanche leader has not been heard of in some time, having left the reservation with evil in his mind and heart a few months ago. With Quanah's surrender at Fort Sill in Indian Territory, Black Forehead is the last of the true warriors. But where is he? Well, our sincerest hope is that he's dead and burning in hell. There is much news these days in Purgatory City, and not just regarding Lieutenant Grimsley's heroics in turning the Apaches back across the Rio Grande. From the Perdition County Weekly Reader, we learn that the highly regarded gunsmith Mr. Bondaroff has announced the engagement of his daughter Ramona to Jed Breen. Breen, of course, is a notorious bounty killer and one of Purgatory City's fiercest jackals. Word is that Breen has decided to give up his previous and nefarious trade to work on guns instead of firing them at human targets. Mr. Bondaroff's choice of an in-law is deplorable, but we wish them all well. More news in Purgatory City and Fort Stanton comes from the Mostly Daily Texan out of San Antonio. General Blair, commanding the District of Texas, has confirmed the appointment of Sean Keegan as Chief of Scouts at Fort Spaulding. A telegraph to Fort Sam Houston to confirm the veracity of this report shocked us with a blunt affirmation. Keegan, as readers might well remember, was driven out of the cavalry for his hard-headed ways, dereliction of duty, and for disregard of human life. But General Blair says, according to the San Antonio newspaper account, Keegan gets things done. Also from Purgatory City, this from the Raucous City's new Weekly Herald Leader, Texas Ranger Captain J.K.K. Hollister has appointed a new ranger in his company, a young soul, previously unheard of, named James Roberts, who goes by the handle Jim Bob. Ranger Roberts' new wife, we learn, is a beauty named Maria, who is helping Claribel cook Mexican dishes to go with her reportedly to die for hash browns. We might be tempted to travel to Purgatory City just to sample the Alamo Cafe's fare. But the new Weekly Herald Leader also reported that Captain Hollister's appointment came upon the recommendation of Matthew McCulloch, the third of Purgatory City's and West Texas's Blight of Jackals. Even bigger was the fact that, the PC newspaper reports, James Roberts got the appointment only because the Jackal McCulloch turned down the position of lieutenant. McCulloch, typically a taciturn man, said he is not interested in being a lawman anymore. He wants to spend his years catching, breaking, and selling wild Mustangs as long as he can fork a saddle. He is living now with his newfound daughter, who holds a reputation as that of the fourth jackal. In fact, Purgatory City is being called now the City of Jackals, men and women. We don't know how true that is. Still, we wish Purgatory City and Miss McCulloch well. We, and most of civilized Texas, are not convinced that three notorious jackals can follow the straight and narrow path. But here's hoping that they can and shall.
The Jackals, Book 5, The Fires of Hell, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2023 J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2025 Graphic Audio, LLC. All rights reserved. Narrated by Matthew Bassett. With Rainer Gabriel as Matt McCulloch. Matthew Pauly as Jed Breen. Danny Gavigan as Sean Keegan. Carolyn Kashner as Cynthia McCulloch. Nick DePinto as Green Clayton. Gabriel Michael as Cullen Bryce. And Ryan Haugen as Jim Bob Hardwick. With additional performances by Mort Shelby, Tia Shearer, Ken Jackson, Rob Marrera, Wynn Delano, Holly Adams, Nazia Chaudhry, Bradley Foster Smith, Kevin Kuto, Keith Richards, Christopher Walker, Christopher Williams, Daniel Yaka, Chris Stinson, Stephanie Nemeth Parker, Nora Ashradi, Jonathan Sleep, Joey Sorlis, Matthew Bassett, Cody Roberts, Stephen Carpenter, Drew Kopas, Laura C. Harris, and Rose Elizabeth Supan. Adapted for graphic audio by Matthew Bassett. Directed by Matthew Bassett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Jameson Hunt. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed The Jackal's Book 5, The Fires of Hell, you may also enjoy Smoke Jensen 52, Blood Bounty of the Mountain Man, also by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Keep listening for a preview of Smoke Jensen 52, Blood Bounty of the Mountain Man, in hard-charging graphic audio.
Buck couldn't hit him center mass, but a foot was protruding from one side of their cover. Buck sent a bullet into it. The man's instincts caused him to jerk up, and that's when he caught a bullet in the forehead. The other man was blinded by rage now. He popped up from behind the rock and emptied his gun in a frenzied burst of shots. The bullets ricocheted off the rock Buck sheltered behind. Once the gun's hammer clicked down on an empty chamber, Buck cautiously rose up.
You put your hands up, and I'll let you live.
The man reacted just as Buck figured he would. With a deranged look in his green eyes, he hastily lurched for his rifle, which lay a few feet away. Buck fired once, twice, then a third time, all the bullets catching the man in midair. They jerked his body violently. He landed on the hard ground just as bubbling blood frothed from his mouth. Buck inched near him with both guns still trained and ready.
You're him. I seen you once before.
Something desperate gripped Buck. Suddenly, he didn't care nearly as much about the wagons and their freight below. He couldn't even focus on the Graysons and their trouble. The only thing that mattered was gleaning what little piece of information he could from this dying man before it was too late.
Where? Here. In Montana.
In Montana?
Oh, fought against you in that range war. Fate. Jensen's ranch. I let a shuck out of there before you done me in. Oh, guess I wasn't so smart this time.
The man's arms jerked involuntarily, and then death claimed him. Buck stood. Below him, in the past, the shooting had died down. He could hear teamsters yelling and whooping in victory, but his mind wasn't on them. Faye Jensen, who was she? And what was this about a range war? Had he been a hired gun? As smooth as he was with his weapons, that would certainly make sense. He repeated the name over and over in his mind and then saying it out loud.
Jensen.
That struck him. He felt like it should mean something. Had this Faye been more than an employer? He was deep in thought as he made his way down from the hill.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.